Decades before Charles Darwin created a sensation with the publication of On the Origin of Species, there was Mary Anning, who discovered a dinosaur skeleton, an ichthyosaur, when she was 12 years old. Mary became one of the most well-known fossil hunters in her lifetime, but today almost no one knows her name. However, two books about her were recently published. Shelley Emling's is called The Fossil Hunter, Dinosaurs, Evolution, and The Woman Whose Discoveries Changed the World. It's published by Macmillan. And Tracy Chevalier's is a novel called Remarkable Creatures. It's from Dutton. And I'm very pleased that they are both joining me now to talk about Mary Anning. Hi.
Hi.
Tracy, is this the first work of historical fiction you've written about something involving science?
Yes, yes. And at first I was a little nervous about it because I tend usually to write about art or literature or my comfort zones. And this time it was fossils, which I had never, I think I had but once or twice been on the beach to pick one or two up, but I had never really studied it properly. So it was a little scary, but it was also challenging. I don't like to stay in a rut, and I was really happy to get myself to do something else and find out about something else.
A far cry from someone like Vermeer's Servant Girl.
Yeah.
But how did you hear about Mary Anning?
I was at a dinosaur museum in a little town in southern England with my son. He was going through this dinosaur craze. And so we were looking around this museum, and there was a little corner of it that had a display about her. And I had never heard of her, I was amazed at her life. She was a working-class girl who was self-taught, collected fossils, and sold them for a living along with her father, and then discovered this ichthyosaur skeleton at a time where they had no idea there were such creatures existed. In fact, they thought that most people thought the world was 6,000 years old, and this really was it was an extinct creature, which surprised everyone, and she went on to become very famous in her time, but not so much now, and I thought it was time to revive her a bit.
And Shelley, how much did you know about Mary Anning before you began to write about her?
I knew absolutely nothing about her. I was a bit like Tracy in that I went fossil hunting with my 11-year-old son. Ironically, both of us have 11-year-old sons.
Yeah, we have our sons to thank for this.
And he loves fossils more than anything and science. And he said, I used to live in England for the last several years. And he said, will you take me fossil hunting in the southern coast of England? We went one day, and we went into a little museum, just like the same one Tracy went to, I'm sure. And I saw an exhibit about Mary Anning. Had never heard of this woman in my life. I thought, wow, that's interesting. But it still didn't register in my head. And then I went to the Natural History Museum in London a few weeks later, and there's a giant portrait of her there. And I looked on the website, and it called her the greatest fossil hunter the world has ever known. And I thought, wow, and I've never heard of her. And I started asking British friends about her. They'd never heard of her either. So I thought she deserved a story.
But we all kind of know about her, because didn't she inspire the tongue twister, she sells seashells by the seashore?
She did, but I didn't realize it was her that inspired that tongue twister, which I think was from 1908.
Yeah,
I did not realize
like
that.
And it is a kind of myth that it's about her. We don't really know for
right.
sure, but it sounds good.
I almost
named the book that, but then I thought it's just going to be too hard to say all the time. So. And
the
also, how do you
twister.
Translate it into other
people
languages?
Going into the store say, she says, forget it. So she was famous during her lifetime. She may have inspired a famous tongue twister. How come she's been forgotten? After all, she didn't discover the first dinosaur bone ever, did she?
No, there were others, but she was, I think there were two reasons why she fell out of, nobody really knew much about her. First of all, she was a woman, and second of all, she is working class. Now, working class, at the time, if you wanted to be a scientist and lecture and talk to other people, join scientific societies, you had to be a man. You couldn't, if you're a woman, you couldn't go to university. You couldn't join the Linnaean Society or the Geological Society. You couldn't.
You couldn't even travel around the country.
No.
I mean, unchaperoned.
Unchaperoned. And so there was a. And secondly, she was working class. So she was entirely self-educated. She was basically collecting these fossils in order to put food on the table. So she was not really thinking along the lines of building her career.
Was England rich with fossils?
Where she is from, yes, it was very rich with fossils, and it still is. It was a 95-mile stretch of coastline that's now a World Heritage Site. And because of erosion and the tides, there's a nice array of fossils that are laid out constantly.
There's this layer of Jurassic limestone that is exposed at these particular cliffs and along this particular shoreline. And it's still a haven for fossil hunters come from all over the world to go there.
If you go there any time of year, people are out there hunting for fossils, especially ammonites. My 11-year-old son loves ammonites. And you'll find them out there every day of the year looking for fossils.
But I've never thought of dinosaurs as being having lived in the British Isles, the Gobi Desert, the American Midwest, and Montana.
Technically, they're not dinosaurs. They're ancient marine reptiles. Mm-hmm. But it's always hard to say that. You know, everybody loves that
ichthyosaur.
The D word. Yeah, ichthyosaur. And later she discovered what's called a plesiosaur.
Like the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, it looks a bit like the Loch Ness Monster. Both about 200 million years old. And so technically not dinosaurs, but ancient marine reptiles.
And what did she think she had found when she came upon this ichthyosaur fossil?
Crocodile.
You're right, a crocodile, which is amazing.
And that's why we thought of them as reptiles ever until fairly recently.
Not exactly. I mean, she thought it was a crocodile because she didn't know any better. And then she looked, and the eye of this creature is huge. It's like a big donut size. And it didn't have claws or legs, it had paddles.
Right.
And so very quickly, scientists, I mean, she and her brother sold this specimen to the Lord of the Manor in Lyme Regis, who then sold it on to people in London. It eventually ended up in the British Museum, and scientists started lecturing about it and studying it. And they said, there's no way this thing can be a crocodile because it doesn't look like one.
But then, and then later on, when she discovered the plesiosaur with this long neck, which nobody had ever seen anything like that before, that was completely new. I don't think she had a clue as to what she was discovering.
But she was self-educated, and she probably knew as much as anybody about this at the time because she was going against all conventional wisdom, wasn't she?
Yes.
Well, she was. I mean, I always thought the most interesting thing about this woman is that at the time, people did not believe in extinction or evolution. So for this young girl to discover a plesiosaur, a pterodactyl, these crazy creatures with long snake-like necks and bat-like wings, and to think that they might be flying out of the sky at any moment, I think that's amazing that this woman found these things and was probably scared to death.
She was born in the right at the right time in the right place.
Yeah. She was.
Yeah.
This is pre-Victorian England. But was Darwin aware of what she had done?
I think he must have been. I mean, he was born in 1809, and she was born in 1799. She died in 1847. So
there was only 10-year difference in their ages. Mm-hmm.
True, but, you know, he didn't go on the Beagle until 1839, and by that time, she had done most of her collecting and selling of fossils. And she died of breast cancer in 1847, unmarried, quite a deeply eccentric woman. Mm-hmm. Always had money troubles, even though she did make some money. She always had money troubles. And she, I think, that he would have been aware of the things that she found, and he would have read what people had written about them. He probably would have even heard of her, but she wouldn't have heard of him because, you know, he famously kept his ideas to himself until 1859, so it was long after she died.
Well, did she become wealthy as a result of finding these fossils? Tracy says that she always had money problems.
She did always have money problems. I mean, from the beginning, she was starving virtually. Her father died when she was only 11 years old, so she sold fossils and shells to put food on the table. That continued pretty much her whole life. She never really had a large accumulation of wealth. But she did make a name for herself, and I think even Charles Dickens wrote about her at one time, saying that she was quite an extraordinary character. But I think she was also ridiculed by some of the townspeople because she was so eccentric, so bizarre for this woman in these big, voluminous skirts to be, you know,
doing something a man should be doing.
Yeah, doing something a man should be doing. There's landslides and high tides, and, you know, it was a very scary, dangerous business, and this woman was doing it.
Also, she was with a lot of middle-class people because when she found the ichthyosaur, all these middle-class men started coming down to Lyme Regis and saying, could you sell me one or help me find one? And so she spent a lot of time with men on her own out on the beach, and this was really frowned upon. So she wasn't supposed to do that. And she herself said later in her life that she felt between classes. She wasn't educated enough or brought up in middle class, so she couldn't join the middle classes. And yet she wasn't the working class. She felt like she'd left that behind. And in the novel, I have a book. My book is told from the point of view of Mary and also a very good friend of hers named Elizabeth Philpott.
A real person.
Who was a real person, and they were good friends. But oddly, Elizabeth was very much middle-class spinster, lived in Lyme Regis, also fascinated by fossils. And Elizabeth had more education, and it was a very peculiar relationship, I thought, because mostly Mary would have more likely have been her servant rather than her friend, and yet they did become friends.
My guests are Tracy Chevalier, who's written a novel called Remarkable Creatures, and Shelley Emling, who's written a nonfiction book about the same person. Hers is called The Fossil Hunter, Dinosaurs, Evolution, and the Woman Whose Discoveries Changed the World. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. You were going to say something, Shelley.
I was going to say that what was very interesting about her is that she led these very wealthy men along the beach wearing their most of them were Anglican clergymen, so they're wearing their long robes and big hats, and she's wearing her tattered skirts, and they're relying on her, this poor woman, to lead them on these excursions along the beach.
Now, why Anglican clergymen? Wouldn't they be the last people to want to think that something had gone extinct?
So you would think. But oddly enough, a lot of the men who trained as scientists at Oxford and Cambridge, they trained in geology, the natural sciences, also trained as clergymen. There wasn't the separation of science and religion at that time as there is now.
But in Mary Emling's case, wasn't she a member of the Dissenters, which is not a mainstream religious group?
No, that marginalized her quite a bit. She was a member of the dissenter religion, although later on she did join the Anglican Church as she became a little bit grew in status.
Yeah. And what were the dissenters?
Dissenters were anybody who wasn't Church of England. So they were outside of the mainstream, but most of them still believed that the Bible was literal history.
Yes.
And so they, too, were surprised by the idea that there were creatures that had become extinct, because to them that went against the idea that God had created the world in 6 days, set it in motion, and the world that we see around us is exactly as it had been when he created it. And to have an animal that went extinct was suggesting that God actually made a mistake,
right,
and let something die out. And this was blasphemous, practically. So even dissenters would have been a bit horrified by it.
But this does set the stage for acceptance by some people, anyway, of Darwin's ideas, I would think. Challenging. I can imagine that the scientific community must have gone bonkers when they had to work this whole thing into their scientific theories.
But they were trying to reconcile these issues at the time. I mean, I think a lot of the clergymen were trying to figure out, how can we reconcile what Mary Anning is finding with what's in the Bible?
Yeah.
And one man in particular, William Buckland, used to say, well, it's because of Noah's the flood during Noah's time. That's why all these fossils are out here for Mary to find. But what's most interesting is this is a debate that's still going on today,
yeah,
I think. That's what makes it so interesting to me anyway.
Others suggested that the world wasn't – when they say the world was created in 6 days, a day in biblical terms didn't mean an actual day. It meant a period of time. So that was how they got around the idea that the world is bigger than 6,000 – longer than 6,000 years old. Maybe it was like
10,000.
A day meant – 100,000 years or something that.
Well, but they had no idea that we were going to talk about millions of years.
Right. There was no concept of deep time. And so you could say that what Mary discovered was kind of the softening of the ground, this hard ground,
yes,
of the way people had rigidly thought of the world. And this was softening it up and leading the way to Darwin.
She was finding creatures at different levels of the earth, and that led people to start thinking of that actually the earth wasn't 4,000 years old.
But
yeah,
she was just running a local business. Did this lead to more serious development in paleontology?
Oh, yes.
Oh, definitely.
Yes. And in fact, I think what happened was the reason she didn't ever become really wealthy was that for a while she was finding them, and she was always the best at finding these fossils. But some of the men would come down and start finding them for themselves. And by the 1830s, a lot of people were doing their own fossil hunting and finding their own, so they didn't have to buy them from her anymore.
You said that Mary and Elizabeth were both spinsters.
Yeah.
They didn't have a relationship, did they? Do we know?
What, lesbian dinosaur hunters?
Yeah, there's a new novel.
Yeah. No, I think that they were very good friends.
Uh-huh.
Didn't get any sense. But, we know very little about Mary Anning, which is why it's amazing that Shelley's managed to write a biography, because it's so hard when there's so little information. And Elizabeth, we know really next to nothing about.
Well, being unmarried at the time, of course, added probably to her being an oddity.
Very much so. I mean, I think her mother always had hoped she would get married and
settle down.
And settle down, have some children.
Stop looking for those silly things on the beach.
Yes, yeah. She had one brother who did get married. I mean, she had several siblings. They all died, though, at very young ages. She had one brother that finally did get married. But yes, she was a spinster.
When we look at ancient peoples, we realize that shells have always been really important to cultures. In fact, they were collected as valuable pieces of jewelry and the like. And
yes.
It's odd that a major scientific endeavor starts with somebody who's just looking for stuff that will interest people.
Yes, and I think originally Mary found things and sold them as sort of trinkets for visitors,
right.
Ammonites, Belemnites, other things. And they called them all sorts of things, folk like Belemnites were thunderbolts and Ammonites were snake stones and things like that. But it was only when she discovered this ichthyosaur on the beach that it suddenly became not trinkets, not beautiful little objects.
Right. Because this was not pretty.
No, it's ugly. It's very, very monstrous looking, but it was far more important than anything else she had ever found.
And people lined up at the Egyptian Museum in London, I think. It was a new museum. They put the ichthyosaur on display, and people lined up and waited in line a long time just to get a glimpse of this remarkable creature.
Yeah.
Tracy Chevalier will be giving a reading and signing books tonight at 7:30 at the Barnes & Noble store opposite Lincoln Center. That's at 66th Street. Her book is Remarkable Creatures, a novel. It is published by Dutton. And Shelley Emling's book, The Fossil Hunter, Dinosaurs, Evolution, and the Woman Whose Discoveries Changed the World, is published by Macmillan. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.